Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Well, hello, everybody. I figured I would shoot this video and just say thank you so much for being with me through these 300 episodes of the In Liberty and Health podcast. Today's episode is very, very special, and I want to thank Dan McAdams for making it possible, and Chris Rossini as well, because he was the one who scheduled this interview. I figured I would shoot it off my porch because just look at that view. How could you not admire it? One more time, I just want to thank you guys for supporting me through this adventure. I've made a lot of great friends, have learned so very much, and it's been a very, very great journey, and I hope to continue to do it for 300 more, and if not 600 more episodes. But I hope you guys enjoy this interview. Here is my interview with the great Dr. Ron Paul. All right. Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for joining me right now. And today on the line with me, I have the greatest congressman to ever grace the halls, Dr. Ron Paul. How are you doing, Ron?
Very well, Kyle. Nice to be with you.
Of course. Well, I'm very, very pleased to have you. One thing I wanted to jump right into, because when people said, okay, well, who is Ron Paul? I always have to show them the infamous Giuliani moment. So I kind of wanted to get your opinion and thoughts on that exact moment, how you felt there and afterwards.
Well, it's been talked about so long that the reflection has to be all the excitement afterwards, which probably... If that didn't occur, you know, I probably walked off and would have probably forgotten about the whole thing. But I was surprised there was that much excitement. I was pleased when I found out that the naysayers that came in and said, "You're done. You'll be embarrassed staying in this campaign. That's so dumb what you did." And it turned out to be exactly the opposite. It was sort of was the beginning of me becoming better known. The position was very clear, because it was a war position and it was a freedom position. So I was pleased with that, but it sure lasted. I was impressed with the fact that the whole issue lasted for a long time. It still goes on.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I said, I still watch it pretty frequently and think, wow, I can't imagine what it was like to be in front of thousands of people and knowing what they want you to say, but telling the truth, despite the fact that I think you probably knew that it wasn't going to be very popular in the moment. And I think that's sorely needed. And I think I see that a little bit in your son. But, you know, has that always kind of been a part of who you are, as in somebody that was always willing to tell the truth, no matter how popular it was?
Well, it did come naturally. But I think sometimes people are luckier to be concerned about it, and they have an instinct that comes with it. But I think family has a lot to do with it. And it's just that it was something that, when I ran for Congress, I didn't run to be a member of Congress. I had a different thing, and that was to try and straighten things out, because people, and it was the monetary issue that they were lying about that, and it was trouble. It was going to end up in our bankruptcy and all this. So I was, that's what motivated me. And, the trying to get a seat in Congress and get in the banking committee and become a chairman, that was the least of my concern. So I was grateful that if anything, I consider myself having been born with a curiosity in this area of how things work and why people do things and what are motives and this to me was a natural instinct. But it was something that was very strong on me. I just wanted to know the plain truth of things and figure things out. And it just led almost accidentally that it was in politics that I would have the best chance to express myself. I wasn't destined to become a professor that wrote famous books. And it just worked that way. And I took advantage of it.
Interesting. So your earlier career as a doctor, did you find any kind of crossover between having to deal with patients and then having to deal with, telling the truth like you always did?
Well, I think so because medicine was, really a mixture. And I think, I have to admit it was a political benefit too. That the fact that, when the Republicans and Democrats came at me really hard and heavy over the drug war, the war on drugs in that 1996, when I was, after being out for 12 years, I was running again. And that was vicious because they said really, really nasty things, and I'd give drugs to babies and all that. But what we responded with an ad with me holding a newborn, and then my wife said, she annoyed her because they were really nasty, and she says, we need something a little softer. And she claimed she wasn't interested in politics and didn't understand all the issues. But she says, what I'd like to do is make a cookbook and put all the family in there and as favorite recipe. And I always kid when I report this, I say, yeah. And I told her, that's not any good. That's not a good political thing to do. Who cares about all that? So I'd rib her and I'd tell that in an audience. And then after I, knock it down a whole lot, I would usually end by saying, well, but I had to confess after the cookbooks went out, it turned out to be the most powerful political brochure that I ever put out. People like that. But it had to do with family and it had to do with me practicing medicine. And that probably helped identify who I was. And yet I concentrated and emphatically believed everything I said and tried to understand about the economy and the monetary issue. And the two blended together that had me there for longer than I ever dreamed I'd be.
Right. And obviously all people of my ilk, libertarians and I'm sure Republicans alike, are all grateful that you spent so much time there because a voice like yours is sorely, sorely needed. So when it comes to your family though, I'm not sure I've ever heard you lay this out before. You've been with your wife for over 60 years, correct?
Born in married in 57. That's
Ooh.
66. Yeah, 67.
Wow. Okay, so yeah, my dad was born in 1969, so that's quite a long time. How have you kind of maintained the American dream, if you will? Because I think a lot of people now kind of look at monetary policy, at least the people like us kind of look at monetary policy and the relationship situations of today. And I think a lot of people would like or envious of the position that you're in. So, not that there's any one secret, but how did you kind of prosper throughout the last, 60, 70 years?
Well, overall, I think it's I believe if you come across something that you really believe in and think is right, even though it'll be imperfect, you do the individual has a moral obligation to try to spread that message. And I tell people when I give speeches is that if you're coming around to understanding what I'm talking about, you really have a moral obligation to try to spread that message. And I think you are an example of that. You're still
Thank you.
promoting a message. And I think, and other, the other thing at speeches, I would say, and we have to talk about the really bad things that happen from bad government. But when you get together, as we did with our, rallies, people should have fun, doing it. And I find ideas much more exciting than a lot of other things that people can engage in, so to me it was excitement and surprise because everything seemed to be a surprise and so much of it was positive because the goal wasn't to see how big the crowd I could get, but the crowds got bigger and bigger, and I was, where do these people come from? So I was impressed. Of course, I was pleased because they were coming to hear about freedom.
Yeah, and that's very, very interesting and very important. And I think that's something that's missing amongst a lot of political figures today, where you really do have to have kind of a culture that appreciates the kind of values that we're talking about. And I don't think you can really successfully spread them without that kind of, you know, enjoyment amongst people. And people have to have fun when they're expressing these ideas and talking about them. And I think that's kind of what you brought to the forefront. And I think that a lot of people after you kind of rode that wave.
Yeah, but you know, the thing that gave me a lot of interest and a lot of satisfaction, and it was brought to my attention, and that is, you know, at big you know, when we had a convention in Florida, you know, one of the presidential things when the rally was going on, somebody said, "You talked for an hour and 15 minutes, and you never once mentioned the Democratic opponent or the Republican opponent," and they were irrelevant. You know, they weren't what I was there for. So I think that I think that if you concentrate on that, there is a tremendous benefit. One thing that I always was pleased by, and it would happen more than once or twice, that after a talk to college students or young people, they would come up and they say, "What I want to tell you, Dr. Paul, what I really like is you are an optimist." And I thought, well, I just talked to you about for 45 minutes. Yeah, that's what I'm saying to myself. I talked to them for 45 minutes, tell them what they're facing, you know, how bad it could be. But I spent 15 minutes, and I'm sure you're well aware of it, I'll talk about how miraculous the ideas can be. And if you follow these ideas, miracles can happen. So I would say that they heard the last 15 minutes of, as bad as things are, there's something out there called liberty that could solve a lot of our problems. And they were very excited about it.
Yeah. And I think you're a shining example of that, that the human spirit is a very, very unbreakable thing. And when you lay out challenges before us, we seem to always want to prosper no matter what, no matter how difficult the task is. Even if you told somebody that, hey, there's a 99% chance you fail, we're banking on that 1% chance every single time. And I think, you know, if anybody, you definitely understand that.
Yeah. And somebody I would ask along that line is, how did you stand it up there, you know, all those years? And I just said, well, I had low expectations. I didn't think I was going to change the world. You know, I was just one guy that came across something that not many people have ever heard about, and that was Austrian economics. And some of the reporters and interviewers over those years, I say, is this Mises interview, you know, economics and that sort of thing. But that that is what, you know, was exciting to me. But that is what makes a difference. I just want more people, because it's necessary. I believe the thing's coming apart, but I believe that we have good history, good intentions, but the last 100 years has wiped out a lot of it. But the ideas are there. And matter of fact, I think there's a better understanding intellectually about how markets work now than they were at the time Adam Smith existed. He still believed in the labor theory of value, you know. So, you know, and it has been the Austrian economists that have done this. So, and I was fortunate enough to meet most of the giants who are really the academicians who document exactly how the economy works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one person that I know you're friends with is Peter Schiff, and I always liked his perspective on things, and I like that he kind of springboards the messages of Austrian economics. And for me personally, it always seemed to be the most intuitive, where I heard other economic theories and I'm like, this never quite made sense. But in my opinion, Austrian economics always just seemed kind of rational and the easiest to grasp. Did you kind of come away with that when you first started reading some of these authors and economists?
Yeah, I was amazed. I read this stuff by these people who've been writing, you know, 100 years. I said, it's amazing how many people agree with me. Oh, it's the other way around. They planted some seeds out there for you, and the ideas prevail. And that's the wonderful thing about ideas. You know, if we are people who are interested in this subject, if we're on the right track, you know, the armies aren't going to stop us. The ideas will keep growing and growing, and it may be slow. It might take a while, and there's been a lot of suffering because of it, and it's risky. But ultimately, there's a lot that prevails, and that's been going on. And I still, when I look at world history, I think I think world history is so short. When you think the universe was about four, or our universe 4.5 billion years, and here we are one clip. And I think it's fantastic about thinking about things like that and how they can last. So yeah, we have a mess in Washington today, and you could dwell on that and say it's irretrievable. I mean, they have ruined it. But no, there's a lot of ideas out there. There are people like you. I don't know how many people you talk to on a daily basis, but you talk to some. And what you don't know is how many people they might talk to. So if I could say, well, I talked to 8,000 people at Berkeley campus, and just think of the magic. That doesn't mean a thing. It means maybe five people someplace along the way that I bumped into that had a change of heart and said, you know, liberty is a pretty neat system. And the founders, have given us a lot of guidance, and then they discover it and they get a lot of satisfaction from it. At least I get satisfaction from knowing that people are interested in it, but it's also given the satisfaction that there are more people there. That really should discourage people from, giving up on it, because a lot of people out there exist and we have to mobilize them, but we have to continue to change people's hearts and minds. And I think there's a lot of people, out there right now that...
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Need to be energized.
Right, absolutely. Now, one thing that I kind of started to think about the other day was that as things get worse, I think it disproportionately radicalizes people. And that's not always necessarily a bad thing, but, as the government prints more money, as our foreign policy continues to get worse and worse, as it has over the last, couple of decades, people really wake up to this stuff a lot more and more because they start to see it in their wallet. So after 2020, obviously, we started seeing runaway inflation. And that's when people, I think, start asking questions like, what the heck is going on with, monetary policy and our foreign policy? And, why is everything that I go to do now so much more expensive? Why is it, so much more difficult to live my life compared to, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago?
Yeah. And I think people are always looking. There was a time at one of our debates, they ask all the candidates, about what tax would you do? And they talk about, the flat tax and different approaches to collecting the money. And I said, well, the tax that I fear the most, and I think you better watch out, is the inflation tax. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people still don't quite understand it, because, certainly the enemies are, because as soon as there's a problem, they talk about taxing people to pay for that problem, rather than saying that, if you spend more money, because they want to spend more money, of course, on every problem you have, that you're the problem. You're the problem of doing that, because it's not your money. You're stealing it. You're using the government force to take that money, and it leads to the devaluation of the dollar. So we should talk a lot more about the problem. The problem of high prices is not gouging or labor costs or anything like that. It's caused by the devaluation of the dollar. And that is what was the big eye opener for me when I was reading in the 1960s what the founders were predicting of what would happen to the Bretton Woods. And boy, when it happened, that to me was a real confirmation of what we should be thinking about, in the monetary system, because that to me is, the big economic issue that we live with. But that's tied into big government and militarism and all the nonsense that goes on, because if they'd have if they'd have stuck to the principles that there is no central bank, which is what the founders ended up with, no central bank, no inflation, and that's a crime. The first Coinage Act was passed in 1792. They had the death penalty in there for people who would counterfeit the currency. So I would always get it. I think we were in the, I don't believe in a death penalty because the Fed's so awkward with everything. I say, yeah, but I think we need to renew that. And maybe they quit printing the money.
Yeah, no, honestly, and really the way that I've kind of always tried to explain to people is that inflation essentially is them stealing your future purchasing power, because it's exactly what it is. Like you said, you're devaluing the dollar, and then when people go to access their retirement or whatever later on, that dollar's not going to go nearly as far as it should, because once again, big government needs to print more and more money. So one other thing I was kind of curious about, when did you kind of wake up to the idea that like our foreign policy is an absolute disaster? Because you were one of the only ones, you know, on that stage in 2008 that was willing to say that when, you know, tensions were still high 7 years later after 9/11.
Well, the motivating factor for me to speak out, which led me winning a open seat or somebody had retired in 1976, was economics. And in the 70s, the whole 70s was terrible, runaway inflation, not runaway inflation, serious inflation, and the breakdown of Bretton Woods. So that was a big issue. And so when I spoke out, all of a sudden I found I was, you know, running for Congress, and I would make mention, you know, of the of foreign policy. I did have a hard core on understanding it. I'd been in the military, and I had to, you know, see a lot of suffering that occurred, with all the foreign interventionism. But the longer I was in Washington, the more interested I got and saw how it was connected to the Fed. You know, if you want to do away with these useless wars, make sure the wars are declared and not just any old time, because they have access to the counterfeit money. So when I saw that connection, then I really, put a lot more emphasis on foreign policy. So if I had been asked to describe exactly what my foreign policy was when I was describing exactly how I understood the monetary policy in 1972 or 73, I would have had some of that, but probably not compact into a good philosophy of non-interventionism. And be able to, the big thing is you can say that, but you have to be able to explain what happens if you do these things in economics. What's going to happen? Are the poor people going to multiply? So you have to explain and tell the people, no, there's going to be less of them. They're going to be better off, not worse off. The government is lousy, and today it's easy. Look at what the government's done to it. Look at, yeah, they get into the housing business. Yeah, where are they living now? In the streets, all the big cities, committing crimes. You know, we have to throw it back at them, because it is government that has caused those kind of problems. And if you understand the principles of freedom of choice and property, you do away with that. You have to preserve the efforts of incentives. You have to be rewarded, for what you do rather than punished.
Yeah, absolutely. So one other thing I wanted to touch on that I don't think I've ever heard you really speak on is how you've maintained such great health over the years. As you could see, our current choices for president, unfortunately, between Biden and Trump aren't the most, you know, shiny examples of health. But I know that you still, you know, do some physical activity. I recall hearing your son in 2020 wanted to just go work out, even though he had that little cold that was going around. And that says something to me. That says that you instilled the same values that you still have to this day of taking care of yourself, into Rand. But I'm kind of curious how you've done it for as long as you have.
Well, first off, I love sports, and I love to do that, and I felt better physically by doing that. And also, in a religious sense, I can recall parents and the church teaching you that your body is something sacred given to you and presented to you by a creator, and you shouldn't abuse it. And that I thought, I always thought about that too. But I do it for selfish reasons. I feel better if I exercise, and I have fun doing the exercises. I talk to my patients a lot about exercising, and they might weren't much into it. They'll learn how to play tennis or something and have a little fun doing it. It shouldn't be hard work. You know, calisthenics to get your exercise when it's necessary, you have to do that. But I thought it was much better if you tried to do that with enjoyment. So even today, if I'm not feeling so peppy, if I go out and walk, it's really good therapy. And I did at one time had a treadmill and a bicycle indoors, but I got rid of them. I didn't like it. They weren't going anywhere. And I'd much rather be outside, and it was therapy for me. And it worked out that it helped me along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. So the title of the show is In Liberty and Health, and that's because I've always found that these two things I think are very, very intrinsically linked because, in order to maintain your health, you have to take responsibility for your actions, you know, the food you put in your body, the physical activity that you do. And I think that goes to things in the external world as well, where you're responsible for your consequences of your actions, and that produces more of a free society. Would you agree with that hypothesis? And if so, have you always felt that's manifested for you?
Yeah, I've agreed with that, but I'm not sure of all the ramifications there, but I think exercise should adapt to the person. The person might want to do it, but that's why I put the issue on them. They ought to have some fun. I mean, just think of the obsession with athletics. And now, right now, you know, the professional athletics are getting to be not as friendly toward what I'm talking about. So it's something, but now there are more people who are energized by betting on sports than they're going out and having some fun, you know. Mm-hmm. So that to me is a shame.
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right, because fitness and nutrition, health and all that stuff doesn't need to be tailored to every individual, because every single person is going to be a little bit different. And your tolerance of, you know, resistance training or what have you, physical activity, is going to be entirely dependent on each person. So I know you got a little bit of a time limit. I got two more questions for you. And the first one is, what does liberty look like to you?
Well, freedom of choice, you know, that you're your own person, and you're responsible for that and everything that you do. And liberty means that, the one thing is, people say, well, I want to be treated. I want to be treated like I treat other people. People say, well, you know, there are some people that become sort of masochistic, you know, and they can't use this argument that why are they so evil? They're supposed to treat other people like you want to be treated. But some people are self-destructive. And then I get to think, they shouldn't do that. They should learn otherwise. So I think it is a personal choice. There's no doubt about it. But a lot of instincts, people should let their instincts go. And I think it's been more challenging to me in the last 20 or 30 years, because there's been a change in attitude in medical care. Government's taken over, and I make fun of the PDRs. You know, the PDR has a book that big that it has all the names of every drug. And I've drifted much closer to, you know, natural medicine and understanding nutrition and exercise and these other things. And I'd advocate that. But I think the only thing that'll do it is people will enjoy it. Enjoy the benefits, or enjoy it while you're doing it.
Absolutely. I agree with that completely. This morning I was squatting 365 pounds, and there's something about that when I'm, you know, at the bottom of a squat, it feels pretty good. So what does health look like to you, Dr. Paul?
Well, it's going to vary, because so many people have been born with or exposed to or occur to them in war and all that, and they look very unhealthy. And yet I've seen some who, boy, they should be depressed and not having a job, but they've overcome that. So overcoming some of the handicap is a big challenge. My heart goes out to some of these people, especially. One thing that just tears me up is when they come back from these wars that should never have been fought, and talk about not only the deaths that have occurred, but the people who have come back with sometimes loss of one, two, three limbs. What a tragedy. And I keep saying it was all preventable. But then some of them have been able, technology comes along and has helped a lot of people, and they can be healthy. So people have to, you know, have a positive spirit. And I think helping people and health, and, you know, so yes, there's a lot we can do. And we've been talking about what do we do for ourselves, but we do need help at times with people to benefit their health. Rebuilding extremities takes a lot of technology to have happen, but I would say they are healthy people. So I think it's going to vary, but it sure is a lot of fun in life if you're healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that's very, very, that kind of goes to a point that we were making earlier about the human spirit, desire for prosperity. Dr. Paul, go ahead and I guess leave my audience with a positive message and what kind of gives you hope about the future.
Well, I get a biggest boost when I talk to young people, because I always tell people, as I campaign and did end up talking to a lot, young people were more open to what I'm talking about than I always say, than the Chamber of Commerce. And I don't know, I used to belong to the Chamber of Commerce, and it's not meant to be a completely dig, but it's Chamber of Commerce that identifies with the lobbying, special interest, and all. So I think that's you know, so important is reaching people, energizing them, encouraging them. And now I bump into people that said, I said, well, you know, one common thing about the libertarian, where'd you get your influence? I think it's sort of you asking me that question, who influenced you and what you do that? And it's sometimes that people say, well, you encouraged me. I was like, well, how'd that happen? So that is important. That but the wonderful thing is we don't know how big the remnant is, and the remnant is out there, and ideas have consequences, and no matter how bad it looks like, they can't stop an idea, because an idea whose time has come will prevail. And that's the way I look on it, as I've been very positive.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Paul. As I told everybody when I was doing this, or that I was going to do this interview, I truly do believe you were probably one of our last chances to save America. If not, you know, hopefully there's somebody out there that will, you know, kind of waken the remnant like you do, and hopefully we can discuss these ideas. But I think the future looks bright, and I think you did a lot to lay the groundwork for people like myself and many, many others to kind of carry the message forward. And I want to thank you for that. And I'm sure all my audience absolutely adores you and feels the same way.
Very nice, and nice to be with you today and with all your listeners.
Thank you so much, Dr. Paul. We'll close.
Very good.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
With Robinhood, not only can you trade individual stocks and ETFs, you can also seamlessly buy and sell crypto at low costs. Trade all in one place. Get started now on Robinhood. Trading crypto involves significant risk. Crypto trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Crypto LLC. Robinhood Crypto is licensed to engage in virtual currency business activity by the New York State Department of Financial Services. Crypto held through Robinhood Crypto is not FDIC insured or SIPC protected. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Securities trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Financial LLC, member SIPC, a registered broker-dealer.